Hello, this is Karen Fresco with the News Gazette dated Wednesday, November 27, 2019. We begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined, Macy's Parade, Clowning Around is a Dream Come True. Thursday's big event will have local flair, by Julie Wirth, New York. Keep your eyes peeled for the wedding clowns in Thursday's Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade, and you may just spot two hometown faces frolicking with the spectators. Jody Davis and Denise Martin were invited to perform as clowns in this year's parade, courtesy of Davis's daughter, Ellie, a J.P. Morgan analyst in New York City. Ellie Davis has two friends who are Macy's corporate employees, including one who is the parade's volunteer coordinator. They invited her to take part and asked if she knew anyone else who might be interested. Jody Davis jumped at the chance and persuaded Martin to join her. Martin has watched every Macy's parade from start to finish since she was a kid. She and her best friend, a fellow pom-pom girl in high school, also call each other every year when the Radio City Rockettes are on. She's always dreamed of performing with the dance troupe. "I love parades," Martin said. "I love the Rockettes." Unfortunately, she's also deathly afraid of clowns. "She's scared of clowns, but she's also willing to be a clown," Davis clarified. The two women will be in a group dressed as a clown bridal party. Martin figured that would be a little less scary. "My son said, 'Oh, Mom, just do it,'" Martin said. To participate, the women had to apply and certify that they could walk 2.5 miles. They also had to go through Clown University, or Clown U, as it's known in the biz. That involved watching a set of videos about the expectations for Macy's clowns, primarily that they should have fun with the crowd and help make the parade come to life, Davis said. "Our role is to interact with the spectators. They won't be giving out candy, but will be able to throw confetti. They can't take photos or text during the three-hour parade, or eat or drink in their costumes. There's this list of things we can't do. We're not supposed to try to get autographs with the celebrities. We're not supposed to ham it up to the camera or put up a sign that says, 'Hi, Mom,'" Martin said. They were told to practice their bouquet-tossing skills, Davis said. Davis and Martin have to report to the New Yorker Hotel by 5:45 a.m. Thursday to get their costumes and makeup, but they're planning to get there around 4:30 a.m. to avoid the line. Once they're in position, before the parade starts, they hope to text family and friends about their place in the lineup. Altogether, about 1,000 clowns will perform under many different themes, Davis said. This will be their first appearance in a parade, but they're hoping it won't be the last. "We want to be able to do it again next year," Davis said. The two women plan to fly to New York on Tuesday morning, then take in the Rockettes show that night. That will be a highlight for Martin, since they won't be able to watch the Rockettes during the parade. They're flying back to Champaign-Urbana immediately after the parade. The parade airs from 8 to 11 a.m. Central Time on WCIA Channel 3, a CBS affiliate. Daily Bread Soup Kitchen, based of Champaign. Many cooks chip in to make annual Thanksgiving feast a good one. By Julie Wirth, Champaign. You think you've got a long checklist for your Thanksgiving dinner? Try cooking 29 turkeys for a crowd of 300. The good folks at Daily Bread Soup Kitchen know when to call for backup. Four commercial chefs are pitching in to roast turkeys for Daily Bread's annual Thanksgiving meal, which is being held today to catch guests who have other places to go on the holiday. Daily Bread enlisted help preparing the birds from Michael's Catering, Hendrick House Distill Restaurant and Holiday Inn in Champaign. Chelsea Spivak, executive chief at Hendrick House, a private U of I residence hall, agreed to cook six. Hendrick House already donates its leftovers to the soup kitchen several times a week, so when a Daily Bread volunteer called to see if Spivak could help, she said, "Just sign us up." It's good timing, as all but 50 of the residence hall students are gone for the week for fall break, Spivak said. Daily Bread volunteer Susan Hinesley was in charge of recruiting the turkey chefs, and she is very resourceful, said Pam Hagel, secretary of the soup kitchen's board. Holiday Inn agreed to prepare five turkeys, said manager Vicky Dunn. It was a new one for us, she said. Spivak is an old pro, having just prepared a Thanksgiving dinner for about 250 Hendrick House residents last week. We have big ovens, said Spivak, a Fairbury native who attended culinary school in Chicago. Her secret? Low temperatures, and don't be in a rush, because turkeys will never turn out that way. Also, use French rosemary, sage, thyme, and garlic, and a little lemon or citrus. It just brings out all the nice flavors from the turkey, she said. Hagel said the Daily Bread holiday meal used to be held on Thanksgiving Day, but we weren't getting very many people. Buses don't run on the holiday, and churches and other charities also host meals on Thanksgiving Day, and longtime volunteer Ellen Harms. Plus, many of those who rely on the soup kitchen have families they can be with on holidays, Harms said. People tend to think that our guests are all homeless, but it's really not true, Harms said. On an ordinary day, Daily Bread serves 200 to 300 people for lunch. The Thanksgiving feast brings in an even bigger crowd, volunteers said. There's a lot more prep involved than for a usual lunch, with help from some big-time donations. The turkeys are provided through Carl, which offers every employee the option of a turkey, ham, or fruit basket that they can take home or donate to the soup kitchen, Harms said. As for the rest of the menu, Piatto's Catering is providing the mashed potatoes and stuffing, Texas Roadhouse is supplying rolls and butter, Amber Glen Alzheimer's Special Care Center will donate pumpkin pies, and the Daily Bread crew is making green bean casserole, gravy, and salad. Volunteers and community members also pitch in to make the meal festive. Holy Cross teacher Mary Tate comes in the morning of the feast to decorate with holiday placemats made by her students and candy for each table, Hagel said. Other volunteers have contributed decorations, too, including a certain inflatable tabletop turkey that went missing for a year or so. We found him in a building next door in a cupboard, Hagel said. We just weren't looking in the right places. One woman typically sings grace for the meal, and over the years other guests have said prayers, Hagel said. The event is such a blessing, said longtime Daily Bread patron Dan Denton. That may be the only Thanksgiving Day dinner that many people get. He started coming to the soup kitchen 12 years ago when he was homeless. Now that he has a home and a car and everything I need, he brings other people to Daily Bread several times a week. So many people are without family, without a father and mother, or sisters and brothers, or kids, he said. They're in this world alone. And when they come here, they have friends and people to talk to and people who care about them. People need that. Everyone needs that. Illinois Supreme Court, meet the new boss. How did I ever get here? She's not the first female to head up the state Supreme Court, but the honorary Ann Burke's journey to Chief Justice is unlike those of the two women, or 118 men, who had the job before her. She battled dyslexia as a kid, dropped out of college as a teenager, and was a 39-year-old mother of four teaching PE classes for the Chicago Park District when she earned her law degree. 36 years later, Burke has been elevated to the top seat on Illinois' highest court, succeeding Lloyd Carmire and joining Mary Ann McMurrow and Danville's Rita Garman as the lone woman to hold the title of Chief Justice. "It's pretty awesome, that's for sure," Burke says in an interview with Capital News Illinois that can be found on A3. And here it is. "I'm a convener of people, from gym teacher to lawyer to judge to the third female Chief Justice in the state's history. Ann Burke has lived in the moment. Don't dream about being over there. Dream about enjoying what you're doing today." A trailblazer in her own right, Ann Burke was appointed to a seat on Illinois' highest court in 2006. And not just any seat. Burke was chosen to succeed the retiring Mary Ann McMurrow, who'd faced one obstacle after another en route to becoming the first woman to serve on the Illinois Supreme Court in its 173-year history. She was the only woman in her law school class in the 50s, Burke said. She was the first woman to try a felony murder trial. She was preparing for an argument in the Illinois Supreme Court, and her boss asked her what she was doing. She was in the state's attorney's office. And she says, "Well, I'm getting ready for oral argument." He said, "Oh, no, women do not argue in the Supreme Court." Last month, Burke was appointed the 121st Chief Justice of the Illinois Supreme Court, a title previously held by only two women, McMurrow and Danville's Rita Garman. Burke's election to the head of the court by her colleagues makes her the first Chief Justice in almost a decade from Cook County. Below is an interview that Capital News Illinois' Rebecca Ansel conducted with Burke in the library of the Supreme Court in Springfield. While Burke touched on several topics, she declined to comment when asked about the federal indictment of her husband, Chicago Alderman Ed Burke, on racketeering and bribery charges. "You've done so many things, teaching, co-founding the Special Olympics in Chicago, serving on the board of admission to the Illinois Bar. What do you bring to this position that perhaps some of your predecessors might not have?" "Well, because I was a gym teacher and college dropout, literally, I didn't go back to college until after I was married and had three children, my real love was children and sports, athletics and the arts, and it still is. So I think my foundation as a gym teacher, even though I was an advocate for children in the gym, I was an advocate for children as a teacher, and I was an advocate for vulnerable people in society as a lawyer. What I bring with me with all that is the camp counselor gym teacher idea. I'm a gatherer. I'm a convener of people, and not doing it necessarily myself, but having everybody else involved. Every team member is important, not one over the other. And I think that's exactly the way our court has functioned, which is not because of me necessarily, but just by the nature of everybody is a Supreme Court judge. We don't have one extra vote because you're chief. You just have to do the agenda and open court and some other things. But outside of that, we're equal. And that's, I think, the team approach that I've taken my whole life. So hopefully, I can consider that as something that I do in my everyday life on the court with committees and other kinds of activities that we participate in. You're also no stranger to being the first woman appointed to something. You were the first woman appointed to the Illinois Court of Claims, and this is a conversation we could be having in a number of other industries. The first woman was named to be Capitol Architect not that long ago. Illinois has never had a female governor. There are probably young girls sitting somewhere who look to you as a trailblazer and a role model. Do you ever think about that? I do. I didn't go to law school until I had 4 children under 10. People should go when they feel like it. But on the other hand, I always try to tell young people, don't dream about being over there. Dream about enjoying what you're doing today. Everything I've done, I've enjoyed at the moment, and that built on to where I am today. I never had the goal to be a lawyer or a judge or even a teacher. It just evolved that way, and I enjoyed every second of it. You might say that I wouldn't be who I was today without having the dreams at every point in my life. The dreams were to be, enjoy what you're doing every second. When you get the chance to see the windows and the doors that open up along the way. If you're so focused ahead of yourself, you never see what's available on either side or who might influence you. So that's what I tell young people. Just enjoy today. Prepare yourself, of course. Go to school. Enjoy what you're doing in school. And experiment with different things. Take that risk. Martin Luther King always said, you never know what's at the top of the staircase, but if you don't take that first step, you never will. Part of your initiative as Chief Justice is going to be a listening tour, increasing access to justice in the state. Could you tell us about that? I've just returned from several different conferences around the country, one on mental health and one on juvenile justice. Everybody has such a wealth of information, you can't help but learn from that. And so I thought that perhaps it would be good for me to travel around the state and just listen to what's going on. The hope is the Illinois State Bar Association will be my host, and they will take me to the different places and invite all the stakeholders in our justice system. So it will be the sheriff, it will be the clerks, and it will be the judges and the lawyers, but also anyone else who's an integral part, public defenders, state's attorneys, should be in the room, and I want to hear what they have to say. There's not so much difference between what we do in different circuits. Cook may have more people, but it isn't necessarily that they do anything different than in Macon County, for sure. That's just there's a volume there. But there are so many things that people might do just a little bit different that we can all learn from, and that's what I want to do, is try to gather all that information, come back and look at it, and try to work with it with our access to justice and our new initiative for the court, and use what people have thought nobody is listening to. I want to listen to them. Is there anything else about what you're looking forward to or anything about being Chief Justice that you want to add? Well, as you opened with, it's the highest honor that anybody could ever have. The fact that I am a woman and not really an academic and dyslexic, how did I ever get here, is my question. How could that be? But it did happen, and the nice thing about our court, one of the many nice things, is that we are geographically diverse, but our state constitution provides how we can have people from everywhere in the state come together and work together because we have the same interest, and that's improving the law in Illinois and delivering justice. Capital News Illinois is a nonprofit news service operated by the Illinois Press Foundation. Its mission is to provide credible and unbiased coverage of state government to the more than 400 daily and weekly newspapers that are members of the Illinois Press Association. Top of the morning, something to get you going today, courtesy Jim Rosso. There's incentive to cheer like crazy at middle school games in Tuscola. Pizza. The clever, tasty idea has 5th through 8th graders acting like the Orange Crush during Hornets home basketball games. Cheerleaders keep an eye on the student section, the swarm, and according to boys coach Dustin Dees, pick the students that were dressed in all black, that were the loudest, most fun, and enthusiastic. Dees then treats those singled out to carry out Joe's Pizza in the cafeteria. How did it get started? We wanted to see more kids out to our basketball games, Dees said. We have kids at games, but they're not really sure sometimes how to cheer and how to be a good student section. We live in a phone era. So I thought if I made it a competition on who could be the most enthusiastic, maybe we could accomplish a louder and more full student section. The swarm has been buzzing ever since. It was a hit, Dee said. Tuscola has a rich tradition at the high school level of having a strong student section. I hope that we can start to see that at the middle school level as well. It's fun for the kids involved in the student section, and it also makes the players feel good to see their fellow classmates cheering them on. Election 2020. Four county offices to see primary contests. Multiple Democrats file for circuit clerk. Board seats in District 6, 8, 10. Deadline not till Monday. By Deborah Pressey, Urbana. Five Champaign County office holders are officially facing competition in the 2020 election, at least so far. Monday was the first day candidates could file petitions to run in the March 17 primaries, and among them are contenders for circuit clerk, auditor, state's attorney, coroner, recorder, and seats in all but one county board district. Candidates will have two more days to file on Wednesday and Monday. The deadline is 5 p.m. Monday. The county clerk's office will be closed Thursday and Friday for the Thanksgiving holiday. Here are all of the candidates who have filed petitions as of Tuesday, according to a list posted by the county clerk's office. For circuit clerk, Republican incumbent Katie Blakeman, and Democrats Robert Burkhalter and Susan McGrath. For coroner, Republican incumbent Duane Northrup and Urbana Democrat Chandra Bishop. For recorder of deeds, Democrat Mike Ingram, currently a county board member in District 6. For auditor, incumbent Democrat George Danos. For state's attorney, incumbent Democrat Julia Reitz. For County Board District 2, Republican Diane Michaels. For County Board District 3, incumbent Republican Stanley Harper. For County Board District 4, Democrat Kelly Lee Mansfield. For County Board District 5, Democrat Jordan Humphrey. For County Board District 6, Republican Richard Montgomery, and Democrats Deshaun Williams and Charles Young, the incumbent. For County Board District 7, incumbent Democrat Kyle Patterson. For County Board District 8, Democrats Emily Rodriguez and Geraldo Rosales, the incumbent. For County Board District 9, incumbent Democrat Steve Summers. For County Board District 10, Democrats Mary King and incumbents Christopher Storr and Connie Dillard Myers. For County Board District 11, Democrat Titiana Ammons. Aggravated discharge of a firearm. Probation violation nets prison sentence. 4 years behind bars is man's third sentence in 2015 shooting. By Mary Schenck, Urbana. A Rantoul man who failed to complete the terms of his probation has been resentenced to 4 years in prison. Assistant State's Attorney Troy Lozar and Waylon Williams, 24, said Waylon Williams, 24, whose last known address was on Juniper Drive, was being sentenced for the third time for aggravated discharge of a firearm, having twice before been sentenced to probation. Williams had pleaded guilty in October 2016, admitting that on July 14, 2015, he fired shots at a man in the 700 block of East Sangamon Avenue in Rantoul. The man was not hit. As it was his first conviction, Williams was given 3 years of probation, but that was revoked in 2018 when he was convicted of possessing a controlled substance in another county, Lozar said. He was resentenced a year ago to 2 more years of probation. Lozar said another petition to revoke his probation was filed in March after Williams tested positive for cannabis, failed repeatedly to report to his probation officer, and lied about his employment. At a hearing in September, Lozar presented Judge Tom DeFanis with evidence that Williams had altered a copy of a pay stub from a Rantoul business in an unsuccessful attempt to prove to his probation officer that he had a job. DeFanis found that Williams had violated the rules of probation and revoked that sentence. DeFanis resentenced Williams on Friday, giving him credit for 61 days already served. Champagne House Search: Man Gets 4 Years for Having Cocaine, by Mary Schenck Urbana. A Champagne man who admitted having cocaine for sale in a home in that city has been sentenced to 4 years in prison. Kyantai Jones Wetherall, 25, whose last known address was in the 1200 block of North Champagne Street, pleaded guilty Monday before Judge Roger Weber to manufacture or delivery of a controlled substance. Assistant State's Attorney Scott Larson said members of the Street Crimes Task Force obtained a warrant to search a home in the 1700 block of Henry Street where Jones Wetherall had been staying. When they went there March 28 to search, they found Jones Wetherall leaving through a window. When stopped, he denied any knowledge of drugs, but another occupant said the 2 grams of cocaine and a digital scale that police found in the kitchen had not been there before Jones Wetherall showed up. Jones Wetherall was given credit on his sentence for 49 days served. Weber agreed to recommend that he get drug treatment while in prison. Larson said Jones Wetherall had a prior conviction for aggravated discharge of a firearm, for which he was sentenced to prison. He admitted firing a gun at a vehicle in June 2013 near the intersection of 5th and Vine Streets. While no person was hit, a house on 5th Street was hit by bullets. Area history. In 1919, prevented from using Illinois Field, everything was set for the big clash of the Champaign and Urbana High School football teams at Champaign's McKinley Field. Mass meetings were held at both schools the day before to prepare for the annual Thanksgiving Day encounter. In 1969, committees of both the Champaign and Urbana City Councils agreed that the cities needed public transportation, but said they would need time to study Champaign-Urbana City's line's request for a subsidy. The private bus line said it needed a decision by December 15. It had indicated that without a subsidy, it would ask the Illinois Commerce Commission to allow it to discontinue service. In 2004, a State Farm official announced plans for the company to open a research center at the University of Illinois Research Park early the next year. The office, to be housed in the Strata Decision Technologies building, was expected to have 4 full-time employees, mostly from State Farm's Bloomington office, plus as many as 16 student interns, said David Cummings, who was to be its director. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the News Gazette, dated Wednesday, November 27, 2019. Please stay tuned.